and picked up the talking machine to give Dale Malachek a job to do. Hinge off the gate here. Guy's got a cancer eye. Put in a cattle guard there. Dale needs a stenographer's pad in his pocket when we're at home. We had a swim before lunch, and that was the end of my hairdo. Most hapless of women when it comes to personal adornment. How did I have Lucy for a daughter? Then the peacocks were strutting across the lawn. I told the Califanos how they roosted on top of the house and were likely to cry, "Help!" in the very early morning, to the alarm of our guests who thought surely some crime was being committed nearby after being waked up 3 mornings by this. Liz, who'd been helping me out by preparing the menus for our stay, put on the next day's luncheon. Roast peafowl under glass. Lyndon left right after lunch for his Nirvana, his true love, the boat. He has every reason to feel fulfilled and proud this weekend. Last week, the voting rights bill passed and the Medicare bill, that impossible bill. It'd been a great week legislative-wise. The headlines even said that factions in Santo Domingo had gotten together on an interim president, but that violent island has reached a temporary peace, it seems. It's a good weekend, in spite of the sadness of George going, and Jack Valenti's writing Lyndon a letter that he, too, thinks it's time that he left the staff. I hope he won't. He's staying at very considerable sacrifice because he's capable of making between $75,000 and $100,000 a year in private business, and he probably gets about $25,000 or $28,000 in the government. He filled so many roles in Lyndon's life, all with great quickness and kindness and a brightness that frequently has a touch of the brilliant, it seems to me. His letter came as a bombshell to me. I had expected it 2 or 3 years down the road, simply because Mary Margaret's ambitions for a beautiful home and a free social life and a husband who was often in attendance could not be served by a man who made the salary and spent the hours that Jack has with Lyndon. I thought it would tweak 2 or 3 years. I think the Herb Block cartoon following Jack's speech in Boston added to the lack of an exact title and line of authority, and then a long build-up of phrases like jack of all trades and valet to the president have resulted in this decision. I hope it will not happen, and yet I see in them both an air of a certain detachment and release. I stayed behind because I wanted to meet the Marshall party at the Sam Johnson house in Johnson City and show them our small little venture into preservation and the interest it was causing. So, a little before 4, Liz and I drove into Johnson City, where we met Cameron and Lucille McElroy and Winston, Vivian Hackney and his wife. We arrived at the house just about the time it was supposed to close and the tourists to depart. But as we went in, a few of them were still lingering. And in fact, many cars were parked all around. So we met the lady hostesses, and then I gave them, with Jesse Hunter, a leisurely tour that was, I hope, sparked with personal reminiscences and intimate vignettes. And a cup of coffee with Jesse, who told us that in the almost 2 months it had been open, still lacks 3 days, that had pushing 10,000, over 9,700 and something had signed the register, and you can't tell about those who don't sign. Yes, from about 47 states and 11 foreign countries. One of the nicest things of all to me was to learn that not a single thing had been lost as a souvenir. I like to have my faith in human nature justified. We drove home and met John, Ben, Shepherd, and Mamie, and their 2 daughters and friend, and got the 3 girls settled for a swim, and then dinner and a movie with the military down at the LBJ Bijou. That's what we call the guest house now when they have the movies at night. And then the rest of us departed in 2 helicopters for the Nicholson. Landed there and drove to the Haywood. This to escape drawing the armada of boats that surround the Haywood, very naturally, when 2 inescapably conspicuous helicopters land. The Don Thomases were there waiting for us. We got in the big boat with Jesse, gathering up our pictures of the brick house, and proceeded leisurely down the Llano River toward the cliffs and the railroad bridge where the lower Colorado River joins it. Lyndon was somewhere around, we didn't know quite where, in the small boat with the Califanos and Vicky, doing ski demonstrations, I was sure, and enjoying the release that that boat gives him. Our communication is so much a part of the day-to-day efficiency of our operation, but somehow not working, which only shows that they're run by men and subject to uncertainty. I climbed up on the front deck with pillows and asked some of the key people of the project to join me. What I hoped we could work out tonight was some beginning of a preservation of the brick house. And I just instinctively asked those I thought might be sensitive and helpful to the project. John Ben Shepherd, because he's a key figure in historical preservation in the state. Winston, because he's my anchor to East Texas and my closest kin. Cameron, because he's got the most vitality, a sort of a mover and shaker in anything that happens in East Texas. Vivian Hackney, because he's president of the Marshall National Bank, but he has nothing to do with Ruth's separate estate, and that is the brick house, the 175 acres around it, along with other things. He at least has very considerable control over all other income that supports her, and might have some influence on her decisions. And Don Thomas, because he has the most background on all the legal matters since Senator Wirtz's death, relating to my daddy's business, and now to the T.J. Taylor estate, that sadly withering giant. We sat up on the front deck on our pillows with our drinks and discussed possibilities. Liz, of course, was there because I looked to her to help implement the things that are closest to me. John Ben gave us some background on tourism, on the number of museums in Texas, possibilities of a tea room, of its becoming a part of the Jefferson Pilgrimage. Liz mentioned the fact that Harrison County was on the critical list for libraries and that there were federal funds available for rural libraries where there was a real need. Mr. Hackney gave us the background on the Harrison County Historical Association. The local interest in it now has a museum in the basement of the old courthouse. And he was also very quick to point out that any dealings with Ruth would have to be conducted through somebody other than the bank, because her lawyer, William Lane Pope, I believe his name is, has something less than a friendly relationship with the bank. Cameron and John Ben both had a rather sanguine approach to the possibility of raising by public subscription funds to acquire the brick house. For everybody, the obstacle seemed to be how to acquire it, who should be the trader, the one to institute the deal. Meanwhile, the full moon came out above the cliffs on the Marble Falls Road. The drinks passed, and I told everybody the tale of Pack Saddle Mountain. And the ladies stayed below, somewhat forsaken, I'm afraid. With sunset, Lyndon joined us, and we went back to the Haywood. And there were the Valentes, Bill and Judith Moyer, glad to see their East Texas folks, and Mary Ellen to meet A.W., Horace and Doug Cater, and Dick Goodwin and Jerry Whittington. I, alert but not nervous at the prospect of having deep East Texas friends sit down to dinner with the President of the United States and his Negro Secretary, a very creditable representative, ladylike and efficient. I'd been pleased to hear Vivian Hackney say that they had hired a sort of a secretarial capacity, at any rate well above the usual domestic, a Negro college girl, gone through some difficulties, such as restroom and so forth, and finally emerged into placid acceptance, a good business relationship. Cameron says they've been voting there since the 30s, and without incident. He feels that Harrison County, with some colorful exceptions, is getting beyond the hating stage. We had a good barbecue dinner with fresh corn right from the ranch and homemade bread and plenty of refills out on the patio with a full moon above the live oaks and the lights glinting on the Llano River. And with the coffee, I invited the men and Liz to join me and go in the house, past the pictures of the brick house. We had a screen set up and showed some stills that Winston had brought us, and the charming watercolor of the brick house that I smilingly made some reference even to being grateful to Mr. Hackney for it, and winced even as I said it, because I thought, somehow this isn't right. I got two. This is one that somebody else gave me. Could it have been Don Thomas? Then we all began to exchange ideas all of those that had come forth on the boat. At Lyndon's suggestion, I'd ask A.W. to come in with us, to add his horse sense and shrewd trading ability. From all the talk, they finally emerged, and it was no surprise to me, nor to anyone, I expect, that it was Lyndon who finally synthesized it, put an end to the chasing rabbits, that he was, as he would call it, congealed the conversation, and laid out a plan of action, according to what everybody was said was possible. Don had said, give me 10 days. Try to revive with Ruth and her lawyer. An earlier attempt, a year or so ago, try to bring back her separate estate into the whole trust for a certain stipulated income for a year, for life. This would bring the brick house and its 175 acres back into the trust, and then the bank would be able to dispose of it according to its best judgment. Don really has his heart in this. He has from the beginning. It's one of the things I like about him. He's the sort of person who picks up pink granite boulders from the Scharnhorst place and has a nurseryman transplant for him a Texas persimmon because it has a white trunk and picturesque branches in his backyard. So to a certain extent, he follows his fancies while being a very substantive lawyer. If his 10 days are up and he does not make any progress with Ruth and her lawyer, then perhaps a state agency like John Ben Shepherd and the Texas Historical Association might try to negotiate, asking them first if they would like to donate it, but it would be perpetuated to Daddy's memory, taken care of, made beautiful public use of, with some prestige for all the names of those who participated in it and were generous in making it possible. If that failed, and nobody thought there was much chance that it would succeed, there might be some sort of public subscription to raise funds to buy it if they would offer to sell it for any reasonable sum to such a state agency. Lyndon stepped in to scotch the idea of any federal funds participating through any rural library or such scheme. First, he thought nobody would come that far out in the country to read.
Nobody.
And then he thought it wouldn't be proper for federal funds to come to any place this close to the First Families Association. So, feeling that we had made some progress, we broke up a little before 11 o'clock and started home, oddly enough, saying goodbye to A.W., who was leaving the next day for Washington. And so was Don. Lyndon was staying until sometime Monday. I felt the peculiar satisfaction of at least having started rolling the wheels on one of the things that I really wanted to accomplish, even at the expense of missing Gunsmoke on a Saturday night.